Thank you, Cheryl. Good evening. Welcome. Hello, Carmen, and welcome to those in listening on the radio and to those listening afterwards. I hope you all had a good week. So we're just going to start this evening with a really short centering, just to sort of come into a place of quietness and to also offer up our time together to the benefit of all beings. So we're just going to close the eyes gently and relax the shoulders and all the way down through feet. And then maybe we'll try some of that Taoist breathing. So just breathing through the soles of the feet, through the heels, all the way up. And then allowing the breath to leave us. So breathing through the soles and the heels of the feet. And exhaling. And from the center of the chest, I'm just going to sort of tune into this place, sort of sense of where our heart is, and not just our physical heart, but like the center of our being. And then from here, we're going to make an offering of our time together this evening. So just offering it up may be of service, not just to ourselves, but to everyone. Everything we hear and everything we say, everything that arises in the mind, may it be a blessing on the world. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. And take a deep breath and exhale. Okay, so I just opened my eyes. Hi, Regina, on phone. And hello, yes, happy first day of spring if we're in the Northern Hemisphere, which we are. So I'm very grateful it is spring. I felt like I've been in a holding pattern for the last couple of weeks, and it was interesting really to watch that frustration arise. I felt like we had a really great winter, really. I'm in New York and it was pretty good. But certainly towards the end I was beginning to get really, really stir crazy and just wanting change. That's I could feel inside just this real deep desire for a shift to occur. So I was trying to just observe that, but I have to say I am very grateful that spring is now here. So I cannot lie. So we're reading the Tao Te Ching. And over the last week, I've been looking at verse number 5. So we're going to talk about that this evening. And I must confess, I've had one of those days where I'm not quite as prepared as I'd like to have been for this evening, but hopefully that'll be okay. So I'm just going to read, it's the Lala Taola's version, just because I think it's some interesting words within it, from just the beginning. And it says, "Heaven and earth are not benevolent. They treat all beings as straw dogs. The sage is not benevolent. He treats all other beings as straw dogs." And another way of looking at this is the Stephen Mitchell version. "The Tao doesn't take sides. It gives birth to both good and evil. The master doesn't take sides. She welcomes both saints and sinners." So it's kind of an interesting start to the, you know, this verse, because it can be a little bit shocking, you know, heaven and earth are not benevolent. And sometimes this is what we think, that, you know, we do the right things and we'll have great things bestowed upon us. But the Tao is very much, you know, the Tao is not some personalized benevolent Godhead that's smiling down on us from above, rewarding us for these good deeds. It really is just up to us individually to practice self-cultivation and learn to follow the natural flow of the Tao. So it's sort of a bit shocking at the beginning. What do you mean, you know, why don't you take sides? And we've talked to this about this before, that when we say the Tao doesn't take sides, it gives birth to both good and evil, that it is beyond the realm of duality, the Tao. And this is really, you know, the Tao Te Ching is sort of training us or cultivating our mind to be in a place where we can be beyond duality of the world. So that's where the Tao is. It doesn't, It gives birth to both good and evil and doesn't take sides. It doesn't see one as good as we think of good and evil as we think of evil. It just is. And similarly, the master doesn't take sides. So if you're a master of the Tao, the sage welcomes both saints and sinners. So these words, the straw dogs, I thought were really interesting in Salala Tao's translation. So heaven and earth are not benevolent. They treat all beings as straw dogs. And similarly, the sage is not benevolent. He treats all other beings as straw dogs. So straw dogs, I'm told by Salala Tao, were used as sacrificial vessels in rain festivals in China and were burned as offerings. So Lao Tzu is saying that the Tao treats everyone, human or animal, in the same impartial way. Everything is just there to be sort of sacrificed or burned as an offering. It's not that anyone, that some people get to do it and some people don't. There's no such sort of discerning between straw dogs. Everything can be put on the fire and burned. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way of looking at it as well. Just this idea that everything is ripe for awakening. That everything, all the good stuff that you cling to, all the desires, and all the bad stuff that you notice, that what you judge as bad, both sides are just ripe for an offering. There isn't sort of, sometimes we think, well, I'll cultivate the good parts of me and I'll get rid of the negative parts of me. But the Tao says, well, there isn't a difference really. You want to be sort of looking beyond that, really in the place of the observer. So take it all and use it as fodder for the fire. And then it goes on. Actually, I wanted to read to you Byron Katie comments on the Tao Te Ching. She has her own book, Thousand Ways to Joy, which is somewhere on this desk. There it is. A Thousand Names for Joy, sorry. And she talks about this idea of the Tao not taking sides. So she says, the darkness, the void, the space that the mind is terrified to enter is the beginning of all life. It's the womb of being. Fall in love with it, and when you do, it will immediately be taken from you as you witness the birth of light. The Tao does not take sides. It embraces both darkness and light. They are equal. And I always find this helpful in the Tao because we talk a lot about light in some spiritual teachings, and I feel my own mind sort of starting to judge what is light and what isn't light. So I love that the Tao sort of says, no, you embrace the darkness and the light. The master can't take sides. This is Byron Katie. She's in love with reality, and reality includes everything, both sides of everything. Her arms are open to it all. She finds everything in herself, all crimes and all holiness. She doesn't see saints as saints or sinners as sinners because they are just people. Who are suffering or not, believing their thoughts or not. She doesn't see any difference between states of consciousness. It's kind of mind-blowing to think about that. What's called bliss and what's called ordinary mind are equal. One is not a higher state than the other. There is nothing to strive for, nothing to leave behind. There's only one, and there's not even that. So I love this idea. You don't even have to sort of strive to this place called bliss. It's just there isn't a place called bliss. There isn't a state of enlightenment because there isn't a state of unenlightenment. There just is. It doesn't matter how you attempt to be disconnected, it's not possible. Believing a stressful thought is an attempt to break the connection. That's why it feels so uncomfortable. And I thought this was really helpful. Believing a stressful thought, so when a thought arises and we believe it, we move away from just being aware of it, is an attempt to break the connection to Tao, to break the connection to God, if you want to use God instead of Tao. That's why it feels so uncomfortable when we believe a stressful thought. All suffering is mental, she says. It has nothing to do with the body or with a person's circumstances. You can be in great pain without any suffering. How do you know you're supposed to be in pain? Because that's what's happening. To live without a stressful story, to be a lover of what is, even in pain, that is heaven. To be in pain and believe that you shouldn't be in pain, that's hell. Pain is actually a friend. It's nothing I want to get rid of if I can't. It's just a visitor. And she says, that doesn't mean I won't take a Tylenol. But even pain is projected. It's always on the way out. Can your body hurt when you're not conscious? When you're in pain and the phone rings and it's the call you're waiting for, you mentally focus on the phone call and then the pain shifts. So if your thinking changes, the pain changes. And then she talks about a friend of hers who was paralyzed from his neck to his toe and was sort of deeply, deeply miserable and suffering with this in his mind. But then he did a lot of practice of self-inquiry and is still a paralyzed man. Nothing changed there, but he is a happy man. He just simply changed his mind. She says he questioned his thinking and the mind changed. And this verse is, as we'll discover later, is very much about questioning the mind. The role, our purpose, our function, if you will, is about sitting down and questioning the mind, being still. And then she talks about some work she was doing in a prison with a man who was incredibly angry because his wife had started a fire and it killed his daughter, and he never thought he would ever be able to get rid of this sort of feeling of deep despair at not having his daughter in his life anymore. And then again, she talks about how they did the work together, which is her sort of practice of her teaching of self-inquiry. And in the end, he was able to see that he could actually see a gap in the clouds where he could be happy even though his daughter wasn't alive. And that really shifted things for him. And all he had done was question his own beliefs, his biology. So the sort of first half, I feel, is very much about sort of, you know, these judgments and these beliefs we make for ourselves cause so much misery in our life, that the Tao doesn't take sides. It gives birth to both good and evil. So it's remembering to come back to that place of oneness. So I just wanted to read to you some more of what Salala comments on this particular verse. So he says, on the journey of Tao, there is no one to pray to or supplicate or make promises to. The Tao is very impersonal, but it is impersonal in the same way that nature is impersonal. Flowers don't really care whether we admire them. They bloom to attract bees and propagate themselves. It is just life nurturing life. In the same way, when a hurricane strikes, it's not because of a need to destroy us. It's not God punishing us. The hurricane is just doing what it naturally does. One of the main lessons from Taoism is that we can understand and experience just who we really are and live a life in the world doing just what we naturally do. And this kind of blew my mind when I was contemplating it. Because the thought of just being completely natural, of just allowing whatever is to arise, you know, without any meaning, without any purpose, without any chat, seems so beautiful. Because in our daily lives, or certainly in my daily life, what happens is it's just a constant naturing of the mind, of you're going to do this and now you're going to do that, and if you do this now then that will help with your workload later, and now you're going to need to call that person about Airbnb, and then you're going to be doing this, and then you're going to do that, and then you're going to feed the dog, and then you're going to walk the dog, and it just goes on and on like this background chattering of what I'm going to do, and then the mind sort of supposed sense of controlling and planning the day and working everything out. And I just think how beautiful it would be to be just a hurricane and naturally do what you're supposed to do and not worry about any of the consequences, because you're just doing what you're naturally doing and you're allowing it to move through you. So I thought that was really, really beautiful to aspire to be, just allow yourself to allow myself to bloom, to attract bees. If I were a flower, and whatever the equivalent is as my human, that's just allow myself to be exactly as I am. And then this verse goes on, the space between heaven and earth is like bellows. It is empty yet never exhausted, always in motion, yet always producing more. And Stephen Mitchell's translation here is the Tao is like bellows, empty yet infinitely capable. The more you use it, the more it produces. And we've talked about this before in the Tao. Hi, Doreen. The beauty of the Tao is this sort of infinite source that once you move away from this idea of duality and then come to this place of the Tao, there's no longer a limitation. The more you use, the more you're sort of delving into the Tao. It's bottomless, if you remember the verse we had last week, where it was the Tao is like a well used but never used up. It's like this eternal void filled with infinite possibilities. That was verse 4 from last week, and again we're sort of revisiting that. As the Tao does, it comes back to the same teachings again and again and again, just with different words. So the Tao is like bellows, it's empty, infinitely capable. The more you use it, the more it produces. The more you talk of it, the less you understand. Hold on to the center. And I just love this. And we're going to talk probably for the next half hour about this particular line, hold on to the center. And this is Stephen Mitchell's translation. So when that phrase, when all the world is losing their head? No, there's, I forgot what it is. When the world around you is losing your head, can you hold on to yours or something? It's sort of like this. Can you just hold on to the center? There's good on one side and there's evil on the other, your mind thinks, but can you hold on to this place in the center, which neither exist? It's all just beliefs. Hold on to the center. And Wayne Dyer and Salalah Tao, actually, let's read Wayne Dyer's version of this particular line. He adds to it. He says, hold on to the center. Man was made to sit quietly and find the truth within. So I love this. So the flower was made to bloom, and the bees were made to come and pollinate from the flower. The hurricane was made to bowl through and destroy things, perhaps. But man was made, says the Tao, to sit quietly and find the truth within. Which is pretty phenomenal because that's not what our ego tells us at all. The ego says man was not made to sit quietly. Man was made to achieve and do from the minute they're born to the minute they die, and to talk and to do all these things that the body allows you to do. That's what man was made to do. But here the Tao is saying, within Wayne Dyer's translation, man was made to sit quietly and find the truth within. And Salalah Tao uses slightly different wording. His is, it is best to abide in our true nature. It is best to abide in our true nature. And he explains, this is where the point in our journey of reading the Tao, we might still be learning what our true nature is. And our true nature has been layered over by so much acculturation and personal history that it's going to take some time to remove those veils. But as our journey progresses, the veils will naturally fall away and we will shine forth as sages, as children of Tao. So I loved it. So I say, I want to spend the next sort of 20, 30 minutes talking about this particular part of the verse. And one is just this notion of letting go of all the beliefs that have sprung up, and some of them are very subtle. So one of the things I was doing today that unfortunately sort of took up my entire day was I had to give a talk about the zodiac. It is the spring equinox, of course, and the spring equinox is marked because in the zodiac, the vernal equinox, the sun comes up in the sky in a certain constellation. So you can't see it because the sun is in front of the constellation. The constellation is lit, should we say, so it's not nighttime, so you can't see it. And the vernal equinox arises in a certain constellation. And it moves along the zodiac through something that's called precession. So at the moment, what is very interesting is that the vernal equinox today, the sun is in the sun sign of Pisces. Now, if you're into astrology at all, or you happen to know your own zodiac sign, you'll know that today is Aries. If you were born today, you would be called an Aries. And that is because when the zodiac was set up about 2100 odd years ago by the ancient Greeks, they didn't realize, or if they did, they didn't mention it. There's something called this precession of the equinoxes, which is that over time, the sun and the earth's path seems to shift slightly, and so the constellations move. So back then, if you were born on this day, you would have been indeed in Aries. The sun would have been in the sign Aries, but now it's in Pisces. And why is this important? Because I was just thinking how often people will use astrology to explain who they are and to explain other people's personalities and other people's traits. People might get quite attached to this idea of I am the way I am because I am a Taurus, and oh, she's a typical Scorpio, and he's definitely like an Aries. But actually, it's not true because of this precession of the equinoxes. If you, as I say, if you were born today, you would be a Pisces, not an Aries at all. But we're sort of keeping with this outdated way of thinking, and it's very simple and easy the way that we all get sort of fall into these traps of becoming very attached to beliefs that are actually untrue. And I just was thinking about how funny an example that is of something we go around our lives saying, well, I was born on this day and therefore I am X, if you're into astrology. And it's not true at all. Not really. And astrologers will argue and I'll say, no, they do some based on something different. But basically that was why the zodiac was set up, and that's why we have these zodiacal constellations and therefore the star signs. And they're just kind of interesting to me, sort of example of letting go of those firm beliefs and labels we have and realizing that they're just made of air, really. I remember a few years ago I was walking down the street and I just had this voice in my ear and it said, opinion is just a word. And that was it. Opinion is just a word. I kept going over and over my head. And I was like, that is, like, what is an opinion? Like, you can't put your finger on it, really. It's just, opinion is a word because we can write it down, but what is the essence of opinion? And there's nothing really under it, there's nothing to it. So this is kind of what the Tao is reminding us to do here, is just like let go of these opinions and let go of these beliefs that we have and come back to this very calm center. Okay, sorry, I have some tea. Does anyone want to, if anyone wants to add something or say something, feel free to type in the room or raise a hand. Okay. So, fewer words are better than many. Says Lala Towers' version, it is best to abide in our true nature. Hold on to the center. Man was made to sit quietly and find the truth within. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about silence and this idea of going within and just taking a seat and going within. And I was reading this week a book called The Awareness of Self-Discovery by William Samuel. And just to sort of give you some context, Tess Hughes mentions William Samuel in her book. Tess Hughes is a awakened Irish lady who had a satsang with Jacqueline. In the Awakening Together sanctuary. And it was very inspiring, and I bought her book, and she mentions a couple of other teachers in it and people she read. So I went and bought this book, The Awareness of Self-Discovery. And in it, in the very first chapter, William Samuel talks about silence of the self and what that is. And he also talks about simplicity, this idea of simplicity. And one of the reasons I love the Tao, and that I wanted to read and sort of, I say study, but just sort of absorb the Tao, is because it is an extremely simple teaching. It's 81 verses. Each verse is only a handful of lines, and the verses repeat themselves over and over again, and they all sort of say the same thing, which is just come back to your center, quiet the mind, just let go of things and be still. Don't get involved in the way of the world, just let yourself be moved by it, but just keep your mind in a state of oneness. Keep coming back to yourself, coming back to yourself, coming back to yourself. And we'll talk a bit about how we might do that in a little while. But I thought it was interesting because he talks, William Samuel, about simplicity, as I mentioned. And he says, once in China, I was given a simple verse to read, and then I was asked to give my interpretation. I was ready to give an answer, but was informed that I had 28 days to think about it. Why so long? I asked, with the usual impatience of a Westerner. Because nothing has been read once until it has been read 12 times, was the answer I received. Read and reread. And so I did. 12 times 12 to make 12 readings. And I heard a melody I could not have heard otherwise. Since then, I have known why it is that certain lines in the Bible or any other book that have been read countless times will one day, upon just one more reading, suddenly take on a grand new significance. So, reader, with a very gentle touch, read and reread. If you are in earnest and act with the earnestness you are, one day when you least expect it, you'll hear and feel your heart within complete with these words without. And I thought that was very beautiful and very apt for the Tao, which is, can get very repetitive, but it's beautiful because all you're doing is reading and rereading the same teaching over and over again in slightly different words. And then one day, just on that one more reading, it might suddenly, have a revelation. So then on to this part about silence. What he says is, whatever leads us to the silence of the self also leads us to the light in fact that we already are. And he shares this beautiful story that I wanted to share with you about what silence is, specifically when you are contemplating and reading and listening to teachings as we often are in this circle. As a boy living on the Mississippi coast, I often made long afternoon pilgrimages into the backcountry bayou, a veritable swamp, but a wonder-filled place for a boy. It grew water cypress and huge oaks, festooned with flowing moss that I likened to the hair of a lovely dream lady. A railroad skirted the back edge of the swamp, marking the usual limit of my penetration, and there I had a special place to watch the evening phenomenon of the flowing moss on the live oaks as its colour changed in the setting sun from grey to green to nearly yellow, and then for a short moment to a deep red along its edges as though it were on fire, thence to a dark grey again and nearly black as the sun dropped below the horizon. Oh, but there was another wonder to delight a boy on those afternoon journeys. It began when the New Orleans to a mobile train came thundering out of the sun and roared past my vantage point, shaking the ground and splitting the air with hissing steam, pounding wheels, and rushing wind. How I tingled with excitement as the metal monster thundered by. Then, when it had passed and its last sounds had clicked away in the east, there followed a silence so still, so soft, so lonely and so holy that I could never bring myself to be the first to break it. It was a childish game, I suppose, but I would sit in the deep silence of the growing twilight until a gull or a killdeer winging its way would break the silence and tell me to go home while there was light enough to find the way. Were I a teacher at a great university and it fell my lot to give a lecture on silence, I would want a long freight train on its way to Mobile to come roaring through the lecture hall. From that point, there would be no more need for words. Virtually the same lesson in silence was repeated for me in China many years later. And with this second lesson, I learned that many of the pages of truth we read are freight train pages, intended only to make the sounds that follow stand still and soft, like great Mississippi oaks covered with magic moss glowing in the setting sun. I just thought this was a really, really beautiful way of thinking about silence. Specifically when it comes to reading and listening to teachings. But actually, it is in the very stillness that follows that all the beauty lies. And it was sort of felt to me like an encouragement to go and sit down and be quiet and still. And as Wayne Dyer says, man was made to sit quietly and find the truth within. So there's something really special about just silence moving within, and it's not the silence itself per se, as you know, William Samuel says, there's like a quality about silence. You know, we can sit in a cave and be silent, but if our thoughts are going crazy, well, you know, there's a lot of noise in the head, it doesn't feel like we're in silence at all. There's other times we can be in a crowd and feel very centered. And it can feel very quiet and silent to us. So it's trying to sort of cultivate that feeling in the heart. And obviously William Samuel there in the silence that followed, or the silence that can follow a reading, a truth reading, there's something, there's a quality in the heart that allows us just to sort of really sink in and be quiet in that place. And that's the kind of place, or that is the place where you then begin to access the Tao or truth. And that's really sort of what we're talking about when it says hold the center. So I don't know about you, if you are following the gentle healing contemplation group with Regina on Tuesday evenings, working through A Course in Miracles. But that has been, it's been a really interesting week. And one of the teachings sort of echoes the Tao a little bit when it talks about the function. Our function, it talks about our function being the light of the world. And really that is, you know, our function is to just sort of stay in this centered place without judgment, without those beliefs. And it's similar to what we're saying here, it's this case of holding the center. But what happens when you start to hold the center is that you start to observe more the noise on the outside, and which is great because it means there's more to look at, but it can be a bit of a shock initially when you start to come into the center place and you expect to feel very calm. What happens in the deepness of the silence and other things start to arise and you get to witness them, and it can seem quite uncomfortable. And the way I liken it to is that, so I work from home. And we moved out of Manhattan into Brooklyn, and we're in a very quiet neighborhood. And I work alone. And so I'm in silence pretty much most of the day, and if I happen to be on the phone for work, but most of the day I'm in silence. So what happens is that my hearing has become incredibly acute, and to the point where I hear things I would never ever have heard before. So a couple of weeks ago, I guess because it had been incredibly quiet, I could hear this humming noise, this constant humming noise, and I didn't know what to do about it because it was beginning to drive me insane. I just couldn't focus. All I could hear was a distant hum. Like maybe it was someone's dishwasher, maybe it was someone's washing machine, I wasn't sure. So what happened is that I sort of stalked my neighbour and waited for him to come out and move his car for street cleaning, and then went up to him and said to him, "Hey, Sal, so I just wondered if you're hearing this noise. It's kind of like a humming." And he sort of looked at me like I was mad. It's like, No, maybe it's a washing machine. Perhaps you've got a new washing machine, do you think? And he said, no, I didn't, but I'm actually not running a washing machine now or a dishwasher. And he said, oh, I'll come in and have a listen if you like. So he came in very politely and stood in my hallway, and I said, can you hear it? And I could hear it. I could hear this hum, hum, hum. And he sort of looked at me and was like, I can't really hear it. And I was like, oh, okay, well, what about now? And then we got really quiet. And you could see he was sort of straining to hear something. And he said, maybe something. I'm not really sure. And I thought, well, he obviously thinks I'm absolutely barking mad. And I suddenly just sort of felt a little bit embarrassed, really. And he left. And I thought, and this is just because my hearing has become so sensitive because I've been in silence that now I am driven mad by the tiniest noise. I can hear a pin drop or the dog walk on the floor above, and I can hear it and it drives me mad. And I think about this happening sort of similarly when you begin to sit down and start to move into the heart and start to observe your thoughts, move into that awareness, that position of being the observer, that you become more sensitive to, you know there are thoughts going through your head, like people, the big stuff, like people you don't forgive or the issues with your job and all that. But then as you, the more you practice in that practice, the more you become sensitive and hear the tiny, tiny things. So what happened for me this week was that I suddenly started hearing these mild irritations I'd never noticed before. But obviously sort of this current that runs in my mind at some level. And there are things like, why is the toothpaste lid not on the toothpaste? And it goes. And it doesn't bother me per se, it never used to bother me. It probably was just like a flash through the mind and never even noticed. But now I'm kind of sensitive to these thoughts because I'm becoming more and more still and going inside and begin to observe these thoughts, that I noticed that this thought arose. And then I noticed that another thought arose quickly afterwards about that the carpet wasn't straight. And then another thought quickly arose afterwards about how there was a footprint on the floor, and then another one, and another one, and another one. And before I knew it, what I realized was, in this awareness, that there are these angry little irritable thoughts that run constantly throughout the day, and I've just never really been aware of them. They've just been background noise before. But now I'm acutely aware of them, and so now I'm in this position of, unfortunately, I'm trying not to be irritated at seeing them, trying not to judge them at all, but instead sort of welcome the fact that I'm able to see them now and just become aware of them. And that's all we need to do is just sit in our nature. We don't have to force anything to go. You just sit with it, and eventually it will pass us through. So one of my favorite books is by is of Robert Adams. Silence of the Heart. It's like one of those, if the building was on fire, I'd probably take this book. Like three books I'd take, and this is one of them. And it's a series of dialogues with him. He was, if you're not familiar with him, he was a student of Ramana Maharshi, and he came back to America and it's awakened, but he didn't, tell anyone. He was this very incognito, and eventually people tracked him down because they're like, hang on a minute, there's a man living here who studied with Ramana Maharshi, we need to know who he is. And so eventually Robert Adams sort of succumbed and said, okay, I'll do a satsang. I think once a week or once every now and again he does a satsang with a group of people, and they recorded these dialogues and put them into a book. But he talks about abiding in the self and how one goes about doing it. And very briefly he says, he's asked the question, what is the difference between abiding in the I and abiding in the self? So, for example, when I sit down at the moment, I'm aware of the thoughts going on. I'm not abiding in the self because I'm not completely at peace and I'm not in that place of the doubt. I'm abiding really in I. I'm sort of beginning to sort of take the dive in of who am I and who are these thoughts and why are they there, that sort of self-inquiry. And says when you abide in the I, you're abiding in the ego, but it does turn into the self eventually. So while I'm sat there and I'm getting very irritated about all the things that I'm getting irritated about, that's still ego, it's still there. But eventually that will just leave. The more I just sit there and keep asking, who am I? Or who is the I who's irritated? Or just observing that arising, that irritation that then arises from being irritated, and the cycle of that goes on and on and on. Just sitting there, eventually you will reach the self. It says, so when you abide in the I, you abide in the self, actually. They're one and the same, even though we sort of separate them in words initially, because there's only one I, and this small I will turn into the self, and eventually only the self exists. But in the beginning, it does appear like the I, but you just keep holding on and holding that center by asking the question, who am I? Who am I? And his students laugh, so it's pretty clear, and he says, yeah, it's clear as mud. So I just thought this was sort of really interesting as we're sort of looking for this silence within. Sometimes we can be disheartened as we start to delve in and there isn't a silence within. It's actually more irritation arises, but that's a positive thing. It means you're clearing out, you're becoming more sensitive to those subtle thoughts, and underneath that somewhere lurks the self. And then there are a couple of things I wanted to share on self-observation, which helps to abide in the self before we wrap up for the evening. And this is from Red Hawk. And he has several steps on how to observe. And the first is observing without judgment, which is what I was talking about. So when you start to look at the thoughts that are arising, and you're noticing your likes and dislikes and all these minor irritabilities or whatever is arising, that you just let go of judging what's arising, which is easier said than done, because you get irritated at yourself for having these thoughts and why they're there. But the first step is really in self-observation, is it allowing yourself to observe without judgment. Stay steady and unmoved, he says, and allow the process to dissolve. And if it doesn't dissolve, that's fine. It's not for you to force, you're just observing. And sort of coming back to this idea that's in the Tao, man was made to sit quietly and find the truth within. So you were made to do that. That's like, you know, your naturalness is to sit and do this. So don't judge it. Don't judge what arises. You're doing exactly the right thing. You're being very natural and abiding in this, in you, in your true nature, or you will be. And then he points out, whatever you observe, don't try and change it. So again, it's sort of don't judge it and don't try and change it. Just allow it to be. And the third thing is put some attention on your bodily sensation and a relaxed body. So I don't know why, but particularly in these teachings of the fourth way and Gurdjieff and this idea of self-remembering, self-observation, and that we're looking at here, is that it helps to observe where your body is at the same time, like locating yourself in time and space, maybe feeling into the body in your observation. So when something arises, and I've been practicing this week and it's been quite helpful, when some irritability arises and you notice in your mind something arise, to keep me out of this mind space, I just observe in my body any sensations that arise. And that helps sort of ground me in the heart a little bit more and come back into just allowing this emotion or this thought to just arise in awareness. So it's something I found really helpful. And the fourth one he mentions is ruthless self-honesty. So just know, it's always just being truthful about what's there, those thoughts that arise. I mean, we can see the worst of us sometimes, but just remembering that that's just a judgment of ours that, you know, as we talked about in the Tao at the beginning, where is it? I lost my one version that has walked. Here we go, that the Tao doesn't take sides, it gives birth to both good and evil. So there is really no good and evil, it's just in the mind. So we can be ruthlessly honest about what's arising in our thoughts. We can be brave enough to see that the darkest or the silliest or the ugliest of things that come up, that it's all good, better than hiding those thoughts away. So those were just some sort of practices I thought might be helpful as we're thinking about holding on to the center. But I don't know if anyone else has some thoughts about how to move into the center and hold on to it. No? Okay. Okay. So I thought we'd end with a reading from The Way of Chuang Tzu. And this is a translation by Thomas Merton. And as we read some of these the last few weeks. Chuang Tzu was around at the time we came after Lao Tzu. And his book is seen as sort of very complementary to the Tao Te Ching. He sort of is a bit more poetic, goes into a few more words than Lao Tzu does. And this is what he says. You train your eye and your vision lusts after colour. You train your ear and you long for delightful sound. You delight in doing good and your natural kindness is blown out of shape. You delight in righteousness and you become righteous beyond all reason. You overdo liturgy and you turn into a ham actor. Overdo your love of music and you play corn. Love of wisdom leads to wise contriving. Love of knowledge leads to fault finding. If men would just stay as they really are, taking or leaving these eight delights would make no difference. But if they will not rest in their right state, the eight delights develop like malignant tumours. The world falls into confusion. Since men honour these delights and lust after them, the world has gone stone blind. When the delight is over, they still will not let go of it. They surround its memory with ritual worship. They fall on their knees to talk about it. They play music and sing and fast and discipline themselves in honour of these eight delights. When the delights become a religion, how can you control them? So here he's talking about the senses, and then we get dragged away by the senses, and then we begin to make these judgments about what's right and what's wrong, about pleasure, and it pulls us away from the centre. So he says the wise man then must govern, the wise man then, when he must govern, knows how to do nothing. Letting things alone, he rests in his original nature. He who will govern will respect the governed no more than he respects himself. If he loves his own person enough to let it rest in its original truth, he will govern others without hurting them. I love that. Can you love yourself enough just to allow yourself to rest in your original truth? Without adding all these things or thinking you have to be one way or telling stories about yourself. Can you just love yourself enough in its original truth? And then you will govern others without hurting them. Let him keep the deep drives in his own guts from going into action. Let him keep still, not looking, not hearing. Let him sit like a corpse with the dragon power alive all around him. In complete silence, his voice will be like thunder. His movements will be invisible like those of a spirit, but the power of heavens will go with them. Unconcerned, doing nothing, he will see all things grow ripe around him. Where will he find time to govern? That's basically saying if we can just allow ourselves to do nothing, everything will happen. There will be no room to do anything because everything will be done. Okay. Yeah, it's really sweet. The whole way of Chuang Tzu is really beautiful. Thomas Merton in particular, his translation is just really adorable. Okay, so I'm just going to end with some music just to play us out, and I thought I'd pick one that encourages listening to within. So this is Audrey Assad. We had her last week as well, but this is You Speak.
you speak in the silence of the heart. Speak to us tonight. You liberate me from my own noise and my own chaos, from the chains of Alexa. You said, be free. You liberate me from my own noise and my own chaos, from the chains of a lesser love. You said, be free. In the silence of the heart, you speak. In the silence of the heart, you speak. And it is then I will know you, and you will know. In the silence of the heart, you speak. The silence of the heart. Silence of the heart.
Satisfy.
You satisfy me. Till I am quiet and confident in the work of the Spirit, I cannot see. You satisfy me. Till I am quiet and confident. In
Okay. I'm sorry that was loud. Yeah, I actually only had it on two bars. So sorry about that. It's deafening you. It's Audrey Assad, Cheryl, and it's called You Speak. I'm just tapping it into the room. Audrey Assad, You Speak, and it's actually from the album Oh Happy Thought. I know there are several versions of this song, but I particularly like this. Sorry, I lost you there. So yeah, it's from the album Oh Happy Thought. And keep chopping the mic. And Doreen, if you I'm going to speak to you tomorrow, but I can email you, as I have your email, the book, The Way of Chang Tzu and Thomas Merton, although that's all there is, but I can certainly show you where I got it if you are interested in getting it. And I'd love to hear about your time at the Hermitage, actually, when there's more time to be had. So that's it. Thanks very much for listening this evening. And if you've got any thoughts, then feel free to drop me an email. And I hope you have a really beautiful week. And I will speak to you next week when we have looked at verse number six. So in the meantime, have a lovely time. Hold on to your center if you can. And I'll let go of the mic. Thanks.